Hello and glad tidings from the Guardian Film Show. This week, the industry is correcting an ongoing gender imbalance and giving us woman in all her manifest glory. Coming up, you shall see woman as grumpy old spinster, woman as beautiful prostitute, and woman as murderous telekinetic witch. Gloria Steinem, eat your heart out. On the show this week, Chloe Grace Moretz takes a trip to the prom in the horror flick Carrie, and Francois Ozon takes a tour of the sex trade in the Cannes Festival contender Jeune et Jolie. First up, it's Saving Mr. Banks, the truish tale of how Mary Poppins author P.L. Travers let wily Walt Disney have his way with her book. The Guardian's David Cox rode his brolly into town to meet the film's director, John Lee Hancock, and its star, Emma Thompson.
Well, Pamela Travers, you can't imagine how excited I am to finally meet you.
Would you mind? My name is Mrs. Travers, Mr. Disney.
Oh, Walt, now you gotta call me Walt. 20 years ago, I made a promise to my daughters that I would make your Mary Poppins fly off the pages of your books. I promised them, Pam.
I know what he's going to do to her. She'll be cavorting and twinkling.
He can't make the film unless you grant the rights.
Damn.
She was actually perfectly willing for the film to be made as long as it was made entirely on her terms. What she didn't understand, that was simply not possible. She didn't understand the collaborative nature of film. She didn't understand film at all. Film was not in her purview. She would have gone to the theatre, she would have gone to the ballet, to the opera. Film she would have rather looked down upon.
Now, let us begin.
She has a lot of ideas.
What kind of ideas?
Responsible's responsible.
No. Responsible is not a word.
Why does Walt want to make the film? Is it really a promise to his kids, or is it that he sees a money spinner on the horizon?
I think he was capable of both thoughts. I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, we know that he made a promise to his daughters. We also know that, you know, at some point it'd be pretty easy to say, look, I tried, I couldn't get it. Still love you, but I think he saw the commercial potential, absolutely. He wouldn't have chased it for 20 years but for that.
I do think that one can't place too much emphasis on the fact that it was money. You say, well, it's not just that, but actually sometimes it is just that. If you think about what many women are forced to do in order just to get enough money to live on, it makes your eyes bleed.
Yeah, but Walt is supposed to have persuaded her of something. What is that?
Well, he persuaded her he wasn't going to turn it into a cartoon. He wasn't going to have any cartoons in it. He agreed to most of her stipulations. That's what happened. She said, you're not to do this, you're not to do that. He said, okay. And then he did it. He put cartoons in.
P.L. Travers right here in my office. After about all these years, almost 20 of them?
Yes.
20 long years. I wish you could have seen me then, Pam. Lean as a whippet I was. A racehorse. Well, anyway. Now here you are, and look at you. Oh, I could just eat you up.
That wouldn't be appropriate.
I'm joined by the Guardian film critic Peter Bradshaw and film's editor Catherine Shord. Peter, it's a film about Disney by Disney.
Yes,
is that
it is.
A problem?
No, not necessarily a problem. Only a Disney movie could be allowed to have all the trademark rights that they needed, and certainly the clips. And I sense that only a Disney movie would have been permitted the lèse majesté of actually representing the great man on screen, which is a blasphemy that no other studio would go anywhere near. It's a very enjoyable film, or at least half of it is. The half which has Tom Hanks and Emma Thompson in it doing this massive thesp face-off, which is really enjoyable. But I found the backstory, the Australian girlhood backstory, very, very boring, to be honest with you, very dull. And Colin Farrell playing her troubled old dad, which is supposedly the Freudian centre of the whole thing, really under par and a bit sort of suspect and tendentious. I just didn't think it needed it. It's quite a long film, really, with all that stuff.
I agree that the two pieces didn't really kind of speak to each other much, but surely that's the kind of heart and soul of the film. That explains where she's come from and why this story is so important to her.
Well, yes, it does, but it's very, very laborious and contrived, to be honest with you. I think if it didn't exist at all, if it was just about her fencing match with wily old Walt, that would have been fine with me. I didn't really need this confected backstory, which has subsequently, of course, been revealed to have been extremely fictionalised, to be honest with you.
It works as a kind of culture clash drama, though, doesn't it? It's sort of books v. movies. starchy Britain versus, you know, rapacious America. That kind of is quite nicely done.
Yeah, and that's so new, isn't it? I mean, we've never seen anything like that before. I thought that was incredibly... I thought the modern day or the 60 stuff was incredibly one-note, laborious, repetitive, remorseless performances. This very, very basic culture clash. I sighed every time Emma Thompson came on, I'm afraid, and I like Emma Thompson. Yeah, and the backstory... I think it's not just laborious and boring. I think it's dodgy. I think to explain it in this therapy way is dodgy. And this woman's not been dead long. And she got screwed over by Disney at the time. She's getting screwed over again in death, in barely cold death. I think it's a really... I think there's something really outrageous about this film. And I didn't enjoy it at all. All it was him dealing in a very polite way with this mad old bitch who was being such a pain, and it was all because of her daddy. And, my God, what a way to treat people. I think it's incredibly dodgy.
But out of that came a masterpiece.
Your favourite film, but...
I don't know. I've got a love-hate relationship with Mary Poppins myself. I mean, I'm interested because it undoubtedly will have a huge re-release next year because next year, of course, is the 50th anniversary, for which this is sort of a curtain raiser. And I have to say, I'm a little bit love-hate now about Mary Poppins. Some of the songs are brilliant. They have a kind of demonic ABBA-style genius which lodge directly in your head and there's no way you can forget them. And some of them, I think, Feed the Birds, are just very depressing and bad, really. I don't like some of that. But I quite liked this film about how the composition was arrived at. It's very sort of sketchy, but I quite like the idea of a rehearsal room, which again is one of those things about movie making which is never discussed, is the table read, the rehearsal room, going into rehearsal, that sort of thing. I always think that all that sort of showbiz backstage stuff is quite good.
And kind of a nice little support performance from Jason Schwartzman.
Yes, not bad. Incredible how he is the Peter Pan, incidentally, of Hollywood. I mean, how old is he now? He looked like 19 in that. I think he must be in his 30s now, and he seems to have been that age for a very long time.
Catherine, any redeeming qualities to this film?
No,
sure.
No. You say it's a curtain raiser to Mary Poppins. It's not Hewis, this film. It's saying Mary Poppins was so great that even this woman who
even she
didn't
couldn't
like
mess it up.
Even she couldn't mess it up, and even she was charmed by the song so much so that she got up and danced.
Which apparently isn't true. She hated the film.
She hated the film. Yeah. You read the backstory. You read even the most cursory wiki entry. It's crazy. I mean, she so much hated music and musicals that on Desert Island Discs she picked only poems, only spoken word things. It's what they've done to her is really something. I think this is a really dodgy film.
You don't know what she means to me.
I won't disappoint you. I swear every time a person walks into a movie house, they will rejoice.
A heaped spoonful of average allodocious in Saving Mr. Banks. Right now, we're off to the high school prom with Carrie White as our date. She's a God-fearing, sweet, all-American girl who loves her mom and reads poetry aloud in class. So it should be a good night. What could possibly go wrong?
He's not coming. It's a trick.
You see, Mama? You see, it's all gonna be okay.
Oh, repent. It's not too late.
Oh, don't ruin this for me.
The Stephen King novel spawned the Brian De Palma film, which in turn begat Kimberly Pierce's 21st Century Update, a blood-soaked horror flick about everyday cruelty and supernatural forces. Chloe Grace Moretz is the lonesome, bullied adolescent who gets invited to the ball, but a surprise lies in wait for all concerned.
Please don't do this. There will be a judgment. Jezebel fell from the tower.
Catherine, did this bring back happy memories of your own high school prom?
It was nearly a documentary. It's a strange one, isn't it? But it's sort of like a horror classic remade for the Final Destination generation. And as that, it's not too bad. Mm. It's pretty bad compared to the original. But and what I wanted them to have done was sort of amp up the panto. You know, Julianne Moore gives a sort of semi-panto performance as the mum, and there's sort of quite a lot of panto stuff near the end.
It would have worked as a sort of schlock musical, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would have been amazing.
Like
if they'd done
Rocky Horror Picture Show sort of thing. Yeah,
that would have been really good, because it is sort of halfway there. But no, they don't. And there's some great lines, when Julianne Moore says to her, why don't we both go and burn your dress and then pray to God for forgiveness?
Yeah, and I like it when she bangs her on the head with a Bible.
Yeah, that's true.
It's quite shocking.
No, it's not very good, but it's not as bad as they say, I think.
Peter, is it as bad as they say?
No, I don't think it's as bad as they say, but there's a question you're asking yourself all the way through. Why are we doing this?
It's a question I'm asking myself moment of every day.
What is quite interesting is that it's great to be reminded of the original Carrie story, because it's very good, it's kind of compelling. It is kind of feminist in a way, despite your introduction, in that it's one of the very few horror classics which actually has a woman doing the scary stuff. And that's so rare, I can only think of one other. I can think of Audition by Takashi Miike.
And her power comes out of her kind of femaleness as well.
Yes, comes out of her femaleness. It's interesting, it's about blood and menstrual blood and rage and womanhood. And there's a lot of really interesting stuff going on there. My problem is that Chloe Grace Moretz, of whom I'm a great fan, is just tough. She's too tough. She should be one of the bullies. She would be great as one of the bullies, but she doesn't have that fragility slightly sort of learning difficulty feel that Sissy Spacek had.
And the feeling of impoverishment.
Yeah.
I think the original book and the original film have the sense that she was a proper outcast.
Yeah.
Whereas here she's got the kind of, you know, the Timotei hair and she looks, she could blend in with the in
crowd.
And
she looks like she could lift a horse over her head. She looks so strong and confident. And she immediately flowers, of course, into a horror badass at the end. But that's sort of too late for me, really. And all the stuff about updating it for the 21st century. Now, I knew, everybody knew, well, of course, they'll have to film it on their mobile phones. Of course, they're going to have to. I mean, but once they've done that, once they've uploaded it to YouTube, then what? Then we're just back to imitating the original one. I mean, in the real world, there would be some story about what would happen to that video from there. Would it become a national sensation? And I think the film fails to immerse us in the reality of the digital world.
Catherine, it's directed by Kimberly Pierce, who did Boys Don't Cry, which is a terrific film back in 1999, which is also about small town outcasts and the threat of the female. So she's perfect for this kind of material, and yet it doesn't quite work, does it?
It doesn't, and to some extent, I think the artistic ambition that Pierce has, presumably, because she's a serious, proper person, is what makes the film not work. I think the sort of menstruation stuff and female puberty is done actually rather kind of well. I mean, there isn't, you know, it is sort of, you know, and properly and interestingly. I think, you know, if you just had a hack doing it, it would have been better, because you don't want sort of a pale imitation of the classic. You want a sort of either a really art house version or a really schlocky version.
You want the kind of Angela Carter version of the story, don't you?
I wanted Lee Daniels doing it.
That would be fantastic.
That would have had science, wouldn't it?
Oof. I want to be normal.
Wipe that smile off your face.
I have to try and be a whole person before it's too late.
Help us look across the set of her days and ways.
She'd made innocent. The curse of blood would
have
been
cursed. That's not even in the Bible. It doesn't say that anywhere.
Chloe Grace Moretz in the remake of the adaptation of Stephen King's Carrie. There's just time for one more film. It's written and directed by the great Francois Ozon and spins the tale of Isabelle, a middle-class French teenager who has a shadowy double life as a high-class prostitute. To her clients, she's young and beautiful, but to us, she will always be Jeanne et Jolie.
Je vais. Tu rentres à quelle heure?
Francois Ozon swings from the beach to the restaurant to the hotel bedroom with his tale of Isabelle, an enigmatic sex worker who goes about her business with the air of a solemn anthropologist. A solemn, naked anthropologist.
Vous êtes ravissante. Très beaux yeux.
Peter, the depiction of sex in Blue is the Warmest Colour got under some people's skin, but how about it here?
Well, that film was condemned as a movie for middle-aged men. I think this really is a movie for middle-aged men. It's very well done. An awful lot of very formidable talent has gone into dressing up this entirely ridiculous story, which is real David Hamilton softcore. I mean, it's very well done. She's very good. Marine Vatt is very good. And Geraldine Pellas and Frederic Pirro, who play her mum and stepdad, are very good. They play it with absolute conviction, and the whole film, of course, is socked over with absolute conviction, but with warmth and tenderness and interest. But you have to watch it right through to the end, and after the credits are over, you realise, what a ridiculous story. It is very obtuse in that it sets itself aside from the reality of prostitution.
Yeah, kind of.
The reality of prostitution is vulnerable women being abused and trafficked. It's nothing to do with this really rather absurd and quaint fantasy of a young girl's sexual flowering, which it could have been made at any time in the last 30 or 40 years.
And also she becomes, there's a sort of hint that she's almost like an angel of liberation for these sad old men.
Yes, I mean, that is
which is a slightly problematic
argument. It is very problematic. And also this tone that the rich men that take her to five-star hotels, they are the nice ones. The ones that take her to the two-star hotels, they're the nasty ones. You can tell they're nasty because they're cheapskates and they won't take her to a proper luxury hotel. It's very naive.
Treat her like a lady.
They do, yeah. They treat her like a lady. It is utterly ridiculous. But it has to be said, it is only the French could get away with it. And it is done very, very well, technically, in sheer filmmaking technique and fervour and sincerity, which is what you need. It's done very well, and it is very watchable. It is very watchable, but you need a sense of humour.
Catherine, do you have a sense of humour?
I don't know. about this, certainly. I mean, I quite liked it. And it is, you know, people said about Blue is the Warmest Colour, isn't it French? So very French. This is so French in that its sort of argument is, we're all cheating whores. We all screw about. Everyone's adulterous, you know, and the only dignified response, as evidenced in the final reel, when somebody to whom Ozon is sympathetic explains this, the only sympathetic response is just to be dignified about it, to accept it, move on, and not just have a sense of humour, but have a wholly liberal attitude towards it. And that's an amazing kind of promiscuous agenda to set, and he gets away with it, but it is the most French thing ever.
Yeah, you can't imagine the Brits or the Americans or anybody doing it. It just wouldn't
look like the Iranians.
Definitely that. Yes, it would look different. What is interesting about the movie is that it very unexpectedly, quite interestingly, morphs into almost a Chabrol-esque thriller. Halfway through, you think, oh my God, now what's going to happen? And then nothing does. In the real world, it would be a thriller, and Isabel would be very, very tense.
She'd wake up next to the sort of murdered body.
Yes, exactly. And she would be very tense, and it would have a real effect on her. Whereas in this film, she just glides serenely through it, and it's her mother. She is the one who has to have the burden of being upset and looking unsexily, kind of discomposed by stuff. Yeah. Whereas Isabel just glides, absolutely glides through it. And again, it is mesmeric. It's really well done, but it is entirely ridiculous.
Votre fille mène une double vie, madame.
The glorious mystery of sex and commerce in Jeune et Jolie. That's it from us. My thanks as ever to Peter Bradshaw and Catherine Shaud. Next week, there will be another film show. It will be showing films. We'll see you then.